This is WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, Greene, and Columbia Counties, New York. Broadcasting locally on 90.7 FM and globally online at WGXC.org. This is the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'm your host, Chad Weckler. Today we're on location in Linlithgow, Columbia County at a new contemporary arts project space called CR10 with its founder and creative director, Francine Hunter McGivern. Francine, welcome.
Hey, Chad. Thanks so much for inviting me. I was hesitant at first.
Oh, no need to be. We're in a good spot, CR10. Could you briefly explain CR10?
Well, I drove by one day a couple years ago, Wire Road. My friend Mark McDonald lived there for a long time, and we shared a big story of friends and the arts and design. And I wanted Daniel to see the area because it's the valley. It's so special, the lowland and how you arrive at it. And I saw the building from the street, and I just had visions of Donald Judd and Robert Irwin, and that was it. I had to have it. I had to make it a work that I could share in a way about how we see art and where we see art. And I was looking for a new life.
And CR10 means County Route 10. The architecture here, how would you explain it?
Well, CR10 was actually the address that was given on the multiple listing system in the Realtor.com website, which I highly recommend. And so it didn't have a number. It didn't have a street number. And it didn't have a number until about 2 months ago. It took me a long time to get a number. I liked the quest.
Yeah.
And my neighbor, Wayne Raymond, his father built this building in 1955. And cinder block building on 3.25 acres. Wayne's house is right out the window, has 105 windows, 9 doors, big rectangle of woods in the back. So Wayne has a lot of stories about how he grew up here and what they thought they might have some chickens. They didn't have any chickens. Thank God. Yeah. I hate chickens. I don't hate chickens, but I don't want to eat them. And I hate when people say it's a chicken coop because I don't like chickens. But I'm learning to be a little bit more graceful when they bring up the chicken coop word. Mm. But Wayne used to come in here with his friends, and they'd do roller, you know, skating and hot rodding, what do you call those? Go-karting.
Oh, wow.
Big playground. And there's some graffiti. But, you know, he told me his father built the building for $5,000. So I just, it was just like the Dia Foundation to me, all the grid of the cinder block and the grid of the four paned windows and the multiplicity of the architecture. It's just like a temple of geometry for me.
And you bought the property when?
I bought the property, I think it was in 2010. Yes, I think it was around the Thanksgiving. Yeah, Daniel and I think we were having dinner in Long Branch, New Jersey on the ocean, and I had given the guy a number and told him when he wanted to consider it to call me back, and that was a few months later from summertime. He was a woodworker. He had mostly storage here. The Raymond sold the building to an Italian guy. He had some medical mice here. And his family lived in the front gallery in that small 800 square foot. And he rented it to Iron Mountain. And he had the medical mice. He sold it. Iron Mountain seemed to have had a relationship of storage rental over the years. And then this gentleman who was a woodworker, he had a lot of antique cars. And so there wasn't any livestock. It was very virginal. You came in here and you really didn't feel that anything had happened. So it was this conduit of space. Then, of course, Cemetery Road is just arm's length. So, you know, the white witches like me, we loved that there was a cemetery due left. So I don't know. It just was meant for me. I think it was just here waiting for me. So CR10 was the address on the listing, and I didn't have to go too much further. That was a good enough name for me.
And not long afterwards, you had your first show here. Could you explain how you created Enter?
Well, actually, I love your idea that it was not a long time later. It was 2 years later, but it doesn't seem like a long time. So Enter was an idea as an artist myself. I wanted to do a program that responded to the architecture so that I could show a perspective around appreciating the architecture. And the artwork was in relationship to that appreciation. So I invited the group of artists to kind of respond to the space. And the space is just so magical, and the metaphysics of it are just so pronounced that you can't compete with it. So it was a very graceful way in which you could parenthetically celebrate the space. So the group of artists were very generous to support the first project. And the entering idea is entering, you know, in a metaphysical way. So I put this very long 150 feet of carpet because it's an old industrial barn building. People didn't necessarily feel comfortable when you look at the old boards. There's a lot of spaces between. So I felt like this long kind of celebratory, formal kind of carpeting that's about 15 feet wide and 100 feet long made people feel comfortable when they got to the top of the steps. Then I felt that they would be in their bodies and grounded, so they would be receptive to the art in a very immediate way instead of having to wander around with some distraction. And then the scale of all the works and the space between all of the works was a lot about allowing people to just arrive at the work. So either they arrived or they didn't, but it didn't matter because they were within the work.
And I kind of want to back up a little bit because now that I and our listeners are intrigued about Francine, where does the Francine story start for you of how you began?
The Francine story. It's not the first person who's ever seen the Francine story. A friend of mine, Chichi Valenti, once said to me in a very kind of dishy, ironical way, you could take it so many ways, what she said, but she announced to a group of very familiar, intimate friends, Francine's not afraid of change. And I would say that that probably started in New York City on East 49th Street where I was born. And, you know, I think that it just was what you say. There was an indomitable spirit in there about experiencing life. So I've made it my mission to have a very credible degree and experiential junkie. So there's not much I haven't experienced, but that is such a profound idea of how much more there is to experience. And I think that as you go through life, the experience as artists, I think we can work from within or we can work from without, but it shifts in your life. And I can be very hermetic in my own way, but I have another part of me that's very social, that loves the people. So I'm a good conduit. And my work is a lot about circuitries and connectivities and getting into negative space, which is an expansive way in which you go positive and negative. So my life story is just like that. It's very expandable. But now I'm in a place where I wanted to give something in the way about what I believe in the arts and the function of the arts and a way in which I found my way to that path and went through that door. I want to be sure there's a path and a door for others to keep going through, or we're just going to get very concretized in the way in which we no longer address or investigate the idea of the word art, function of art. So I felt that it was a natural arrival for me as an artist and a producer all my life and a businesswoman all my life. I have great left and right brain skills, and I worked very hard to make this kind of vision happen, and it seems like the people got it, so I'm feeling pretty good about it.
Well, CR10 seems to be an artistic creation that you've put together. Speaking before that, leading you to CR10, what are the forms of art that have inspired you, your performances or your creation of artwork that you get energy from?
Yes, pop culture was, I grew up Irish Catholic. There were multi-generations. You know, I went to convent schools. You know, I grew up as a what I call failed debutante, one of my greatest accomplishments. And so I was very blessed to have good manners and good education from a classical point of view. But there were a lot of incredible women in my grandmother's world, and they were all storytellers, and they were all writers, and we had to take music and dance and learn how to cook and sew and entertain and, you know, one of those doctor, lawyer, Indian chief things. And I just wasn't meant for that, you know. And my mom was very disappointed, but she got over it. And so, in a sense, I just loved the idea of the life, the experience itself. Growing up in the 60s, it was pretty easy. So I hit the road, and I hitchhiked, you know, a lot, and I got thrown out of a lot of schools, and I basically robbed Peter to pay Paul my whole life. You know, it's like, get the money over here, find a way to get money for something that's compromising and pragmatic, but you still have the joy of it and the creation of it, and then put it into the creativity. So I did a lot, film, music, theater, performance. And then I started making objects. I probably in my late 30s, I just was over the performance idea. I was over the people. And I had a big place called Jungle Red Studios in Tribeca for many, many years. It was kind of a gestalt of, you know, Warhol's factory, a real simulacrum. Like, this is a simulacrum. I love simulacrums. So Jungle Red Studios started in 77. It was just me. It was kind of modeled after the factory. And I found a way to bring money in. I got a hairdressing license. We had hairdressers. We had massage. We had shiatsu. We had a line of women's couture that was designed by a very gifted man who passed away, my collaborator for 12 years at Jungle Red, helped me build everything, Ken Angelico. We had great success across the mid to late 70s, where all the networks were meeting, fashion, art, theater, underground. I knew artists like Joseph Kosuth, Keith Sonier, Joan Jonas, you know, Richard Serra, the 80s, the new ones coming up, Haim Steinbeck, Jeff Koons, Dia Foundation, PS1, Clock Tower. I was blessed that those were the customers who came in, because I was kind of a diva and I did a lot of shows at night and I kind of kept my networking big. So I worked in pretty much every medium as a freelancer, and all that money came into Jungle Red, and so I kept producing things as Jungle Red Studios in multimedia, but the money came in from doing one thing, and it went into other things. So I had a lot of spaces. I have a great love of space, make stuff happen in space, collaborate with other people in space, low-budget queen. I you know, I was great at iconography. I imagined myself as an icon that could attract a certain kind of attention from a certain group that I was interested in. So I built that as a work of art, as a construct, as a developmental practice as an artist. Performance was a big part of it. But then I got very interested in documenting everything. So I kind of moved through the thing, and with the moving through, I kind of moved into my body, because I was always on the ceiling looking down. So that was a big thing for me, to move into the body. And then I felt free of the performance and the people and the group and the thing, and then I went into a very hermetic period. I lived in Italy for about 9.5 years, and I started to make installation works that were based in idea, fabricating, and so kind of minimal and simple. Geometry, metaphysics, sexual anthropology. I always tried to keep it funny and happening, you know, keep the crowd interested. And then I moved back from Italy, and I was a certain age where I was overqualified for most jobs. I closed Jungle Red Studios around 1989 when I moved to Europe. I was a collector. I started collecting art in the 70s, late 70s, from mostly people I met in the arts through Jungle Red Studios, a very social group of people in the arts in New York City in the 70s, late 70s. It was a happening period. So I collected a lot of the work. And when I was in Europe, I sold things to keep myself going. And I've continued to collect over the years. So I'm very blessed that I kind of believed in art and real estate. And in the end, I bought 6 buildings with the people I lived in Tribeca on DeBrosses Street. And we were all rent stabilized. We bought the buildings. We converted them to a co-op. Took us a very long time. I got a real estate license in the process. And then I focused on getting my money from real estate and putting that money into art. Very George McCunis, art and real estate. The Fluxus idea, art and real estate. So I've somehow or other been able to walk that tightrope of the art and the real estate. And I got to the point where I really didn't want to do that anymore, because I'm kind of tired of compromising. So I worked hard, and I just decided to put what I had into this, and that will provide me with the future.
Going from
that... Is that a good answer?
Absolutely. And, you know, going from that past into the future, which is a little bit past now, is can you talk about the first opening that you had here and the artist that you had? And it was a wonderful experience to be a part of, I must say.
I know, I couldn't believe the people came. You know, I rented the shuttle bus from the Coxsackie Transport, and turned out Carl, my driver, he called me up. He said, "Francine, I'm your driver. I'm going to see you on Saturday," because I had arranged that to go to the Amtrak so people from NADA could come and go, because it's not easy to find. You have to drive here. It's kind of a destination idea. So Carl goes, "Oh, I know where it is. Well, if you want to come over so you know the way, I know where it is. I live around the corner on Cemetery Road." He lived around the corner 33 years. I don't think, he said to me, he never saw the building. One person took the shuttle bus. Everyone else drove. And at one point I said to Daniel, my husband, I said, "I can't even tell you how excited I am to go outside and see all the cars in a grid." Everybody was just perfectly lined up in a grid, like row after row after row. I just was effusive with joy. It just replicated the grid of the cinder block in the building. I was just having a mathematical ecstasy. That was a high point. All the artists, Joseph Kossuth, Enrico Pedrini, Daniel Rothbart, Bill Stone, Tom Borghese, Chris Perry, my work, Giuseppe Liverani from Carta Books, who donated this incredible library. It just had this really kind of Masonic-like metaphysical happening. People, there was a lot of wonder. People come in, they come up the stair that I built with the oak from the structural beams. We replaced 70-year-old oak, and I took the floor out, so there's a mezzanine. So there's this uplifting. You come up the stairs, and then there's this big space, and then you just... It's just people admired the space between the work. People got it. So that was, it was a pleasure for me. It was about learning something new, which is you don't have forever. Take satisfaction in what you've built and be in the present and really enjoy it. And I enjoyed every minute of it.
And you also had some readers, yes, doing some literary work, and you also had music.
Yes, well, that was wonderful. Richard Bach, one of my oldest friends, who was the infamous doorman at the Mud Club, he's writing a memoir about his time at the door, He was early on at the door, so he has a lot of stories he's writing. He read, very funny. He read twice because there were crowds kept coming. So there were two groups. So he read twice. Daniel videotaped all of it. Maggie Estep, who's kind of 90s rapper, poet, pop star, who ended up writing a lot of novels, she read. And then Reese Tivy, who is, oh yes, Hap Tivy is the other artist. I'm going downstairs now in my recall. Hap Tivy, Hans Vigand, Katerina Sen, Mark Dorf, they're all the artists in the lower gallery. So there were a lot of artists in the show. I forgot. Daniel Rothbart. And Hap's son, Reese, is a trumpet player. He did just an improvisational 20-minute solo on the trumpet. The sound in the building is fantastic. And then a group from Brooklyn came called Aliens, Blake Sandberg and Sam Cohen. They drove up in their alien van, and they set up. Very cool. Very cool. They just have old 70s Fender equipment, very old school garage band. But they're both artists, painters, and they do installation with video and stuff. Just a ton of people came. I met them through Anthony Hayden Guest. Anthony was here. He was very, very kind, Anthony, and actually wrote about me, the first person to give the CR10 some press in April. He wrote in his column in the Arts International about CR10. And then Giuseppe Liverani donated this incredible initial archive of art books. He's a publisher of art books, international museums and top galleries. So rather than pulp the books, he's given the books to Library of Congress and a couple of other non-for-profits, and CR10 was the great benefit of that. Bill Stone was generous enough to donate this installation of these 12 chairs on the 16 cement columns to CR10, so they'll be moved around into the three-acre space, which will be kind of a sculpture earthworks project in the back. The Kossuth work, which kind of functions in a really interesting way of dividing the space, almost like breaking through the space, like a Barnett Newman almost, that will stay. And then I have an idea of being able to box it over so it could be another space for a different work, so you can keep this. And then this flag of Norma Shear, right? Is that who? No, that's not who it is.
It's one of those biblical movies.
John the Baptist. What's her name? Hedy Lamarr.
Oh. Yeah.
So Hedy Lamarr is really important because she actually, before she went to Hollywood, she was a mathematician, and she came up with some kind of root of in physics about something that became very important as an invention in the world of physics and research. So then she became Hollywood. So it's like the Kossuth is the message. It says, tomorrow sex will be good again, which is a quote from Foucault, which is his whole relationship to art and language. And it's beautiful neon work, and it just kind of divides the space at one end of the 7,500. And then she's at the other, so it's like the medium and the message. And I like that there's this hermaphroditic quality to the work in the show and to the relationship with the space, that I'm a big believer in trying to find that in oneself, in the creative, the left and the right and the yin and the yang and the male and the female. Gender is not something that really ever interested me. I don't get it. It's a new world of evolution. But I always thought, turn them upside down, they'll look alike. But, you know, some people really just want to go there, but I don't get it. But it's a whole other world. So there's that about things that interests me, the beyond that persona, the beyond the physicality in the art making.
Is that the CR10 statement, you might say, or its mission?
Well, you know, the website is challenging because I do have to, like, give directions and have to put the phone number on there now and start promoting the next event, and I have to have a mission statement. So I've been thinking about it in a way that I have to, because I'm not really going to be the curator or the programmer. I'm just going to be the bodhisattva that rows the other people over to the other side, and then they come in and can do their stuff. So the second show is called Proceed. It's just an extension of Enter. You enter, you go through this in a way in which you define your practice as an artist, your personal discipline around your practice. You enter into a space, you make a choice, and then you get in there and then you proceed. And the proceed is something for me, the continuity of the idea of acknowledgement. You enter, you acknowledge something, you proceed in the sense of a focus. I think that that is basically a choice of a consciousness that's inherent in the being present while choosing the action of a creative offer. And for me, that leads to kind of a participatory liberation, which I would kind of define as experiencing the continuum. So I'm going to put that up there for now, and maybe next week I'll think of another one, but that's pretty much all I really have to say. I think that I'm not interested in I'm more interested in the doing and the allowing than the saying, and I'm an artist, and language is part of my work. Video, I like all mediums, but I'm not a writer about art, so that's the closest I've come so far. That and the directions will get you a couple of drinks at the next opening.
Just want to remind our listeners, this is WGXC 90.7 FM, and we're in Greene and Columbia Counties, New York. And today we're speaking with Francine Hunter McGivern. So CR10 is an extension of yourself. It's also birthed. It's become its own entity, although you have a relationship with it, almost like a mother and child. Where does it speak to you?
Well, it's a work of art for me. It also connects to a type of work, Joseph Beuys, the Marfa Project that Donald Judd started, the idea of action. Beuys was a big believer in one thing I read, and just to paraphrase it, he believed that artists had an imprint and that your task in development of your practice was to figure out what your imprint is. He believed, the way I read into this, whatever it was I came across, that some people have three imprints, some people have two, but most people only have one. So once you find what that is, it defines for you your practice. So he believed, and this is, of course, a huge amount of people who have led me to where I am, but this idea of the action within that, the presentness of that, it's about getting into a space. And that's kind of in the Pythagorean theorem, the Euclidean, where you get off the gravity. You know, there's this space. You get into a space, and then you're free. And when you get in there as an artist and you start to feel comfortable there, he believed and he encouraged us, you don't have to think about your work anymore. Either you're working or you're not working. So that was huge for me. I worked very hard to get in that space. And then after that, I really did just, it's just either I'm working or I'm making something or I'm not. So the practice of being an artist is about being, period, the end. It's not becoming, it's just being. So I really want the space to be, and I want it to be there for other people to make it be, to exist in the present that encompasses the microcosmic and the macrocosmic. I love codes, you know, I love systems. So make it big, get the network out there and kind of keep it activated with a lot of different people who have ideas, who are rooted in idea, who can make an idea formalize and pragmatically happen and give room and voice to a dialectic that keeps people consciously communicating, whether it's verbally, non-verbally, through our sense of smell or hear or sound. I love sound work. I love light. I love music. I love theater, dance. There's no medium that I'm not interested in. But there's an energy for me that I have to feel it within the way in which somebody's communicating their idea about the use of the space. And that's really my only role here. So I'm very excited about other people making and creating and producing what they feel the space can resonate and give.
I was just thinking, if you were to be able to choose one or two artists that you could pluck from the past, the present, the future, around the world, and bring them in this conversation right now, who would you choose?
Who would I want to talk to right now that's not here, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Duchamp would be good.
What inspires you?
Saul LeWitt. I'm very sorry I never got to talk to Saul LeWitt. I would love to talk to Donald Judd. And, you know, I would like to talk to Wittgenstein and St. Francis of Assisi.
What would be your opening question?
How did you get here? You know what? I think that that basically is something I learned on the Buddhist path, which always start with a question. If everybody continues to ask each other questions, there's an enormous amount of information to be exchanged. So I think you have to make that theatrical gesture of engaging somebody. So if it's very kind of a presentation, it might be really boring and humorless. You could lose them in the first exchange. So I've learned questions are good. I don't think people ask enough questions. Sometimes when I meet somebody, you go out and you're all night asking questions, and you go home and you say to your husband or to yourself, nobody asked me a question the entire night. That happens a lot, but I'm always asking questions.
I totally agree with you. It's often the case we have many exchanges with many people, family, friends, strangers. Rarely is there a question asked.
Well, I think there's a lot of fear. I think that there's so much fear underneath the surface of today's behavior. There's just so much fear. They just have lost their instinctive GPS. So they're always trying to GPS everything. And they just want to know where they're going before they get there so that they can say where they've been and tell people and then repeat the same thing. It's just, there's not a lot of adventure. There's not a lot of encouragement for individuality. I think that a lot of us might agree that there's a bit of an existential crisis, you know, this whole idea of, are you on the ceiling? I've been on the ceiling for most of my life. Like I said a few minutes ago, I had to move in. It was really hard. I thought I was like a shopping cart, and I just would go around and fill it up with everything I could, and I really saw it like that. I thought, hey, this is cool. You know, you just can be up there and, like, guide your trip around with the legs and the arms and the brain, and but we lost that somehow or other. So I don't really know. It's part of evolution, you know, that we must be developing other types of skills. But I do think that there's a fear of having an opinion. I think there's a fear of not being part of a group. I think there's a fear of being an iconoclast, or people are very challenged by their ideas of power, love, wisdom, information, knowledge. All these aspects, of which there are many, many, many in that Tibetan kind of architecture, pathways, so many aspects are possible in one fragment of a second, that we're not given this encouragement to explore, define, and choose to experience all those things. So I feel like there are many of us in the world that are picking a place and inviting people to do that, to be that. And then you can become a cipher for other people believing there won't be an isolation in that connectivity. There is the choice to go outside the status quo by recognizing how repetitive it might be, or how oppressive it might be, or how, and you have to break through, you have to detach a lot. And I believe that the years, last couple years, 2011, were a lot about detaching from things that weren't functioning for you anymore. It takes a lot of courage. You have to really go in there and, like, do some raking and some hoeing. And I don't really like gardening at all. But, you know, I love a rake. Love raking. Oh, I'll rake a path till the day is long. But in the end, I saw it was just becoming very archaic, very fixed. So you got to step out. You got to be a leader. You got to believe that you eject yourself into the unknown, take a risk, and then you're part of creating a new connectivity. You're part of creating another network of people. That's my goal in the arts. The world is small. We can time travel. We can ship. We can truck. We can drive. We can walk. We can surf. We can ski. We can swim. We can all get there. So I really am interested in not the new age at all. I'm interested in the present and making that kind of very microcosmic thing happen in the arts, where even if nobody gives you any attention, you're encouraged to do your work for yourself. and that the satisfaction of making your work for yourself is the gift that you give to the work. You're not giving to get. You're not making the work to sell the work or show the work. You're making the work because that's what you're here for, like the butterfly pollinating or any other kind of thing that you want to believe in is part of life and death. And you can't stave off the end. So the end is part of the beginning. And all the transformative, transfigurative possibilities within the creative are what will keep us young and open and healthy. And so, you know, I love a multi-generational. Enrico Pedrini, who passed away, whose work called 40 Artistas is in here. It's at 5 very seminal texts on physics, starting with Einstein and Stephen Hawking. And he wrote something called The Irreversibility in the Avant-Garde. And it's about the artist is connected to space and time. And the artist, he was a very brilliant man, a curator, a critic. Richard Milazzo, Edgewise Press, published the book called Irreversibility in the Avant-Garde. And he was a scientist. He was a pharmacist from an old Pavian family. And he started collecting, like Saul Lewitt, big collector of Man Ray, Duchamp. He became very involved with Bernard Benet. He collected Judd, Giuseppe Chiara. You know, he was extremely involved in Europe in the 60s. Minimalism, 70s, became a curator, traveled all over the world. My husband, Daniel Rothbart, met him in Naples when he was on a Fulbright. He had written a book called Jewish Metaphysics as a Generative Principle in American Abstract Art. And he gave a lecture in Naples, Daniel, and Enrico happened to be in the audience. So Enrico encouraged him to develop the thesis into a book, which Enrico got published by Ulysses and Calypso in Naples. And they started working together. That was in the late, in the early 90s. And they worked together for 23 years, which is how I met Enrico. He curated shows all over, biennials and huge presence and a real individual. And he passed away. So Daniel, in memoriam of sharing this path, we reinstalled this piece that he showed in Genoa, Rosa Leonardo Gallery. She had a very conceptual. She showed Maurizio Cattelan first. And she did this piece, this curatorial piece of these 5 books, and Daniel put them on beautiful tree stumps that we hand-selected from Bill Stone's forest. It's just all about get into the space, go there. Go there and you'll meet others. Combine and you'll bring it back and you'll keep exchanging that.
What do you think Andy Warhol did for the pop art movement and the factory?
Well, for me, Andy freed everybody from classical modernism to some extent. I mean, he got outside a spatially defined idea of medium. And if you look now at the last 10 or 15 years in the contemporary art world, I remember being in Miami at Basel, and I remember the dealer was discussing the video work as sculpture. And that was genius. I was like, okay, we're moving on. And Andy really started that. Film was sculpture, you know. The actors were sculpture. Everything had a place. Everything had a time. It was just whether you could appreciate it, whether you could be part of it. He had an extremely, I believe, existential effect on how people can do whatever they want if they feel that it's an expression. Not necessarily expressionism or Pollock, but in the end, there's a similar thing. There's an action, there's a choice. So I think he freed people up a lot. And he was a quiet fellow, so he had a lot of mystery. And I think he really did a lot for perpetrating the idea of mystery, the Empire State Building film. You just, doesn't get more minimal than that. How many years later? And then, you know, you think of Lonesome Cowboys, Rene Ricard, Taylor, Mead. I mean, it's just like a celebration of the most decadent and the most sophisticated, and yet it's just kind of primal, the urine paintings, the, you know, and he, I took a lot from him, you know, okay, I had to cut the people's hair or whatever else I had to do, sell them some real estate, but, you know, in the end, it was a one-to-one conversation with everybody I met. People came to Jungle Red to talk to me, and I didn't let everybody in. I can remember saying to Kenny one day, Kenny, could you please show this lady the elevator? I don't think she's going to enjoy spending her money at all. And we were serious, and we took him right down the freight elevator. I didn't want to talk to that person. So it was very hard to find, kind of like CR10, and it was mostly people in arts and entertainment and culture. That's how I marketed it, and that's how I designed it. And And that was who came. So it was like being the shrink or the, it was like a brothel in the daytime, you know, and then at night you just went out 24/7 and made other things happen. And I think Andy gave everybody that idea of just make it happen, go out there and do it. And there was the Fluxus people did that as a group. Yoko Ono, all these, John Hendricks, all these people, they were just, John Perrault, they were making things happen. Bill Stone says to me, he's not really in the Fluxus movement because he didn't show with George McCunis, but he says that was such irony and humor. Billy has such a philosophy. So it's about making things happen, actions, as Boyce would say.
More specifically, I mean, to find CR10 here, you had to come here. Why did you come to this part of New York State?
Well, I've been on a retirement plan for about the last 9 years. It was a long phase of the numbers 1 through 9. So you have to know your phases. You really got to be in touch with your own progression in terms of change and really having the courage and the balls to just change it up. Because when you're really bored, which it's not a word I use often because usually I'll leave before I get bored. But one thing I did notice in my life is when you feel a loss of spirit, and that means that you've given too much of yourself to one thing and you haven't been able to moderate the balance of it. So it's easy to lose your balance. You can get very caught up in certain things and not have enough time for other things, and that's what we all do every day. So I was very aware of this evolution of my own creative life at the age I'm at, and you don't have forever, and I just said, that's it, you know, I'm just throwing it all up there and I'm going for it. You know, I just put it out there in the universe and figured it would come to me, and it did, because I made the cause. I'm a big believer in cause and effect. You have to make the cause, or you have to change the causes you're making to change the effects that you're getting. So you have to be pretty diligent and self-effacing. You got to look at, you know, what's coming to you if you don't like it. I mean, you need to move the cheese. I don't know. So for me, I had to move a lot of cheeses. And I looked in a circular way around the world, Europe, Italy, where I lived, the triangle around, you know, New York, 2-3 hours away, Europe, Mexico, you know, where was I going to move the cheese to? And I just would go out there and figure it would come to me, and it did. One time I said to Daniel I was going to do a show called CR, Everybody Can Just... I did a piece called Jungle Ready Made, which was a Duchampian idea that Mike Bidlow created at a space in New York, and everybody had to make a work that referred to Duchamp. So I did this piece because I like a lot of language, and I like colloquial things and cliches and things like that in language, semiotic ideas of words. So I did this piece called, it was 100 cliches about artists, like makeup artist, dead artist, erotic artist, you know, I don't want to ruin it for you. It's a really good work. The prints are available. But in the end, there's 100 of them, and it's in a grid like a checkerboard, and it's, you know, Duchampian, like the chessboard, not the checkerboard. So this friend of mine, Bruce, came over one day, and he said to me, I see something missing in that list of 100 cliches about artists. Bullshit artist. So that is actually now the name of the piece. But after I showed that piece, every person would say, what about this? When, what about that? And I'd say, why don't you make your own list? You know, you make a list. So it was kind of the idea of CR10. What does CR10 mean? Well, what does it mean to you? When you come in the guest book, you write down anything. It could be anything. Corn, roulette. I just finished The Gambler last night, Dostoevsky's. What a story. So it could be anything. It's stream of consciousness. They're just letters, and there's numbers, and there's images, and there's shapes. And for me, that's very seminal in my work. I got it down to that basics. Four is form. One is the initiative. Two is the creative. Three is harmony. One is the initiative. Two is harmony. Three is the creative. And then out of that comes four, which is form. Things are formalized. They take shape. So the fours for me were shapes, geometry, images of figures, bodies, you know, words, and numbers. Numbers. Numbers, yeah. Shapes, images, and words. That's all I found to talk about when I walked around. So that's still something that I feel is very simple. So you can go into any of them, and it's pretty profound. It's just tons to talk about. And so the CR10 was kind of like an iconographic, seminal, semiotic, whatever it is to you. It's there for me. I drove by. It was on the internet, and I made up a number because that guy over there, he's 277, so I put 279. Wasn't that simple. I had to call the police and register and get approved, and then we had to measure between his lot and my lot. It had to be 130 feet, so actually, however the formula and the code work, I'm 283. And that I just got that number in May, and I've been here almost 2 years, so that was really a journey about CR10, you know? So it's kind of funny.
So what is the future journey?
Well, the future is starting on, the future will begin on September 22nd, when the second show that I've just finished selecting the works for, called Proceed. And again, it kind of goes back to, I mean, I came up with Proceed, and then I kind of realized that it was attached to the mission statement. So it is about the continuum. And, you know, I'm not really interested in making some curatorial thing. I'm just interested in being part of the work. So that's my part of the work. And then I selected this group mostly. It's a group of video artists, installation, light artists, film video, sculpture, projections. It's very minimal, very light, very airy, but there's a lot of content. So it's a really great group of people. If you'd like, I could mention people.
Yeah.
Andrea Zittel, Marepe, Tony Ferrer, Henri Sala, Christian Marclay, Chris Frazier, Brian Dewan, Irit Batsri, Rivan Nuenschander, and William Stone, and myself. I'm going to be in the shows, since I won't be curating any shows after this, so I'm not a person that shows my work that easily, so I'm slipping a few things in here and there. So it's an amazing group of people, you know, from really all over the world, and part of the incredible magic of this next show is that a large amount of these artists' works have been lent to me through the generosity of the Second Ward Foundation. They have an incredible collection of contemporary conceptual art, and they're currently building the school on North 3rd Street called the Second Ward, which will be their foundation, Walter Sudol and Stephen Jones. And their mission is to lend. So we met through William Stone, Bill Stone, and who's been extremely supportive, and we're very like-minded. And they are conceptual collectors, and he offered to share with me a perusal of his collection. And I've selected these artists. About 6 of the 11 artists are from their collection. And Christian Marclay, and I mean, these people are world-class artists who have extraordinarily focused disciplinary practices all over the world. And so I tried to select pieces of their work that, in a way, respond to the experience of the space. So I'm very excited about the selection of the works. And the show will run from September 22nd, the opening, through October 7th. That's 3 weekends, and on those weekends, I'm scheduling performances. So I'm working right now trying to get confirmation of the participatory performers, music and movement. Adam Weinert, who dances with Jonah Boker, opening clips September 5th at the new BAM space. They rehearsed up here in Hudson this summer, and I was very privileged to see some of the rehearsals. Just mind-blowingly brilliant work, collaboration with amazing artist Anthony McCall, who I've known for over 30 years, a really incredibly brilliant man. That's a collaboration I can't wait to see. But Adam has worked with him, and I asked Adam if he might think of a site-specific piece to do. So he's agreed to do something. also John Gibson, who is a musician of great respect in the world, has agreed to possibly do something. And there's some local musicians that I'm asking to do a couple of things. So I don't want to say any names because I don't have confirmation, but those two I have kind of confirmed. And I just would like people to take a position within the show and just do a performance because weekends are here and the building is great for sound, the concreteness of the building. It just, you can't hear it outside, but it has incredible acoustics, particularly the lower gallery, which is all cement and cinder block. And so that's the plan. And then the show comes down October 7th, and that'll be the last program that I will produce for this season. Mm-hmm. But I would like other people to present ideas for using the space, portions of the space, in the old kind of idea of think tanks and people really kind of putting together a like-minded group where they discuss or they read or they show things or they... But I'm open to all of that, but I just can't really produce any more of it. I've got to go down and to the city and kind of keep it happening and make sure I can get through the next season of programming in 2012. Probably from April through October will be the general thing. So I got through the first season. That's mind-blowing to me, and it's just been really amazing that people appreciate it. It's very nourishing to see people love the space.
Well, thank you, Francine, for CR10 and for being in Hudson and being here on the Art of the Hudson Valley radio program. I appreciate that.
Well, I thank you, Chad, because you're one of the treasures of Hudson. I'm very, very fortunate to have crossed your path. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And that's it for the Art of the Hudson Valley this week, this month, and we'll see you next month for another edition.
Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. He's a looking so cute. Sneaking round and round and round in a blue jumpsuit. Cruise rider, motorcycle hero. Baby, 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 he's a blazing away. Stars, stars, stars in the universe. Ghost Rider, motorcycle hero. Baby, 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 he's a screaming the truth. America, America is killing its youth. Beep, 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 he's screaming away. America, America is killing its youth. America, America's killing its youth. Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider.
Hold that tiger, hold that tiger, hold that tiger, hold that tiger, hold that tiger. Here's that tiger. No, 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 no. Hold that tiger.